Hello and welcome to UFOs and the Paranormal. My name is Christine Kisara-Dannett, and I'm going to be the host for this show tonight. And I'm going to be interviewing my favorite person to interview, of course, is Preston Dennett. He's written many books. Some of the books are Supernatural California, Human Levitation, UFOs Over New York, California Ghosts, and just many, many more. I could just name them off, and it's just wonderful to know that he's so educated and so knowledgeable. And he's done a lot of research concerning UFOs, and he wants to tell us all about the updated episodes of what's happening to, I guess, our world. Is it world, or is it more United States that you're going to be speaking about?
Well, all across the world, some of it. You know, recent cases, but ones that I've investigated.
Okay, and I really encourage anybody who's listening right now to give us a call. If you have some new experiences, it's really wonderful to hear it live on radio. And the number that you can call is area code 888-228-4494. And if you have any stories at all, we really, really would love to hear you give us a call right now, live on radio, and tell us all about it. But until now, here's Preston. He's going to tell us a little bit about what's going on right now in the world.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks so much for coming and hosting the show. Yeah, I've been investigating all these recent cases, and stuff is really still happening. Some of the people I've been talking to have been telling me stories that, you know, honestly, I haven't heard before. I've been, you know, interviewing people now for, gosh, let me see, it's over 20 years now.
And but, what do you mean by you've never heard before?
Well, you know, I think there's a misconception in the UFO field when it comes to abductions and onboard experiences, that people think they know what's going to happen, and that it's going to be gray aliens who are going to lay them out on a table, take off their clothes, examine them, stick a needle in them, maybe an implant, and send them home without much memory but a scar. And that's not the real picture. People I'm talking to are having some really unusual experiences, you know, and there's just a huge wide variety of what is actually happening to people. And a lot of it isn't, you know, super scary or even involving examinations for that matter. It's just completely different. So that's what I'm putting together, a new book actually, which is containing all these new extensive cases, which I think blow the myth apart of the standard abduction scenario and show that UFO contact is largely benevolent and very varied and a lot more common than people realize, and is having a profound effect on our planet in a lot of different ways.
That's really fascinating. And have you gotten any new descriptions of extraterrestrials?
Yes, I have. You know, it's interesting. Well, let me just tell you the story that one lady I spoke to recently. She lives in the Southwest, you know, sort of the mid-United States, and a really nice lady, an older lady, who called me and ran across my website and read one of my books, and she wanted to describe her encounters that she's had, she says, all her life, and which sounds pretty normal at first. She said she described childhood encounters with what appear to be gray-type ETs, and this went on for a while, stopped for a little while, and then came back, and these visitations happened to her periodically, and the visitation which I found most striking, most amazing, was this one that she described, which really freaked her out, and she said that she woke up on a ship, basically, went to bed, woke up on a ship, and these ETs were not, there were grays there, but the ones that she was dealing with were human looking and were dressed in jumpsuit type affairs and very friendly and very not really super communicative. She doesn't remember some of what happened. But what she does remember is they took her to this country in Colombia. It's in South America, Colombia, South America.
Uh-huh.
And they told her this. And they said, she's like, why are we here? And they said, a volcano is going to explode. And we need to rescue some people.
This is recent?
No, this was many years ago, actually. I believe this was in the 70s. She told me the exact date, but and I've got it written down. I recorded a long interview with her.
Because I remember a volcano in Colombia.
Yeah, it's probably that one. It was a very famous event. It killed an enormous number of people.
Oh, wow. Go on.
And they said, well, we need to rescue some people. And she says she felt in a normal state of consciousness while all this was going on, but at the same time, kind of not. Because they told her to go along with them. And she didn't question it. She just went out of the ship, which had landed outside of this town, and then she could look down. It landed on the side of the mountain, and it looked down into the valley of where this town was. And the volcano was right there next to the town. And so they walked down into the town, and they start collecting people, you know, small groups, 15 people. They make a couple of trips, not a whole lot that she remembers, just a few trips. And they ask these people to come with them, and these people followed them, and they went into the ship. And after three or four trips, this ship rose up a little bit, and this volcano explodes. And this is where she got really emotional. She was, you know, near tears at points when she was describing this disaster, which she was very close to. Because, you know, as I recall, actually, the ship didn't take off until this mud flows, the pyroclastic clouds and mud flows actually came and threatened their ship. And she says she was right up there next to watching a lot of people die.
She was watching
this entire town get destroyed. And at one point, she says this is what really tripped her out, is the ship went down to rescue more people right out of the muck, you know, out of the mud flows. It was mostly a mud flow, as I remember.
Uh-huh.
Is how she described it, as opposed to, you know, hot lava.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, what happened in this volcano. This is a very well-known eruption. But at any rate, this UFO that she's inside, and she said she stayed on the top level, and all the refugees were put on the bottom level. But she was on the top level in the kind of command center. And she says, that's not unusual. That's where they usually take her. She's been in this situation before on this ship, I mean.
Uh-huh.
So at any rate, in this experience, isn't this amazing?
It's really amazing. It's the first story I've heard you tell me about the ship rescuing people.
Right. You know, this is what I find fascinating about it is there's a lot of people who report being told by ETs that there's going to be disasters.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, nuclear warfare, tidal waves, earthquakes, famine, global warming.
Speaks about the extraterrestrials. Were they humanoid, or were they more?
They looked human.
Okay, so they were more human.
They looked normal, but there were grays there as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is, you know, report. That's what Travis Walton reported. Betty Andreasen, I believe, reported that, and lots of other people do report seeing more than one type of ET.
It must have been a huge ship to rescue so many people. Did she describe how many people went on the ship when she was being rescued, or they've been?
Yeah, I asked her that, and you know, she remembered it was the size of a very large house. She said it wasn't or a small building. It wasn't super duper huge, but and I asked her how many people. She says, you know, it wasn't a whole lot. You know, 30, 40.
Was it an orb or a disc-shaped ship?
Disc and metallic.
Okay.
And a kind of a silver color, not shiny, not like a mirror, but a rather a kind of a dull gray finish. And this is what's weird. This is what happened as this mud flow is going by filled with logs and homes and animals and people, and this ship comes down right into it and kind of gets as close to it as it can and extends down what she described as a balcony with a railing so that people could grab onto it. And they pulled up a bunch more people. Not a whole lot, she said, but some.
Wow.
And she, you know, woke up the next morning. She doesn't, you know, remember this all in one continuous type of thing. She remembers snippets of it. A lot of it, actually. But that's basically what she remembers. And she woke up the next morning and she's like, okay, this is weird. You know, I've had another experience. And normally she has to, you know, she doesn't get any proof that it's real. Not a whole lot, at least.
But she's not dirty or anything?
No.
She doesn't have mud all over her ash?
No, that she was inside before it exploded.
Oh, okay.
And but she turns on the TV, and she recognized it immediately when she saw the news. There it was, what she saw.
That's so fascinating. Did she remember them, like, after the volcano erupted, them releasing the people?
No.
That's really fascinating.
So
wow.
For all we know, those people are still, you know, living with the ETs.
Yeah, cool. That's what I was curious about, because, you know, you'd hear the Colombians talking about that event and saying, yeah, there was a UFO picking people up. I mean...
well, you know, maybe nobody saw it, and I know how that's going to sound, but I keep running across this where one person sees a UFO standing right next to another and the other person can't see it. They can selectively... They have cloaking devices that are superb and can make them invisible to all but one person or two people standing next to each other or two people standing in separate places in a huge crowd and no one else can see it. They could literally land on a stadium lawn in front of during a ball game, and maybe only 10 people would see it, is what I'm trying to say. They choose who they show themselves to in a way that, with the technology, that we don't understand. Because it's clearly way beyond our cloaking technology, which is getting extensive, by the way. We've invented invisibility. It's all over TV and the internet.
I saw some of it, like the theory... But I'm sure they're not showing us everything on television.
No, any technology we see is 50 years old. This is what I've been told several times from different sources, that most of it is kept under wraps. And it's funny, I saw a show. If you watch some of these shows on technology, there's a lot of them out there. Some of it leaks out. The guys who were filming the next Terminator movie went to this advanced group of scientists who were making this advanced technology, and the people who were making the science fiction film said the stuff that was real was more advanced than the stuff that was in their film. So they had to adjust the script.
That's really a trick. Wow.
So we're dealing with... There's an incredible cover-up that people have no idea.
Well, they had been saying that for a while. Like, I remember when we used to go to the conventions and we'd listen to all the lectures, and the lectures that were a part of the government would say that, you know, imagine your technology 30 years ahead of yourself. Well, you know, the government's working on technology that's 60 years ahead of itself, even further on, you know, and we don't even hear about any of it until years and years later after they've developed it.
Exactly. And it's upsetting when you consider the difficulties that we're having on this planet that could be so easily solved, including the energy crisis, the global warming, upcoming disaster, and the economy could all be quite easily fixed overnight, literally.
Yeah.
It would be a transition, but it's going to happen. It will happen. It might take 60 years, probably will, but it's slowly happening, I think.
It's interesting, because numbers, you can't fake numbers. Numbers are pretty much obsolete. So, or absolute. Sorry, absolute.
Yeah,
and
well,
go ahead.
It's crazy. This one guy I interviewed, I actually had him on the show.
Yeah.
Recently. And he was describing to me the black budget that our government has. And so we have this so-called national debt of several billion. I forget what it is.
Uh-huh.
We have this economic crisis. My claim, and according to the research that this guy told me, is that it's a farce. It's totally contrived, and it does not need to be, because we're dealing with our government, our secret government, is spending the kind of money that is, we can't even fathom, trillions. Most all of the budget, all the money, is being spent on black projects. Almost all of it.
Yeah.
So we have no idea what it's even going to.
I know, better, it's silly.
Better ways to kill each other? I don't know. But my
I
guess
don't know
is
either.
A lot of it is on this whole UFO problem. I'm telling you, it is.
Well, what other stories have you heard? Or what other little tidbits of stories can you tell me?
Well, I've got some cool stuff. Now, you know about Topanga Canyon.
Yes.
UFO, that's one of the subjects of my books. UFOs Over Topanga Canyon, it's my third book, and it's still in print. It was published in 1999, and 10 years later, you can still find it in bookstores. It's still an ongoing thing. And in a nutshell, let me just tell you, describe Topanga. It's a rural community, 8,000 plus residents, probably closer to 20,000 now. But at the time of this incident, which was 1992 to 1994, this town, which is just west of Los Angeles, along the coast between Malibu and Santa Monica, experienced a UFO wave involving a whole range of encounters, from sightings to face-to-face encounters, car chases, landings, abductions, you name it. And it went on for 2 years and involved hundreds of witnesses. But it's this night of June 14th that keeps coming back to haunt me, because on this night is when hundreds of objects, literally, were seen over the canyon. And I've been tracking witnesses down one by one by one. When I wrote the book, I had about 12 known witnesses. And it was amazing, each of their stories. There was one couple who was driving through the canyon north when they pulled over and saw three flying saucers. Another guy was driving southwards through the canyon, and he said he was chased by a UFO, which kept shining a beam of light on him. Another couple was driving through the canyon north when they said that they saw six or seven UFOs darting around. A fourth couple said that they were driving north through the canyon when their car was lifted up by one of these objects. It was following them, came down, lifted them up on a beam of light. They had missing time. Very traumatic. This is all one night in the space of 2 or 3 hours, and I kept getting more witnesses. One couple I talked to, they lived high in the canyon, and they saw this entire incident starting at 8 o'clock, stretching to, well, they went inside around 10. They couldn't handle it. They were too traumatized. But they saw groups of objects coming up from behind this one particular ridge in the south end of the canyon. And this is the important part of this, what I want to say tonight, because they saw these objects coming up from below, not from above, presumably. I mean, there has got to be some sort of base there, because there were so many objects coming up. They saw about,
and it's coming up from the water, from the coast?
I think it's either the water or the land there. My guess is it's probably the water, because there's so much USO activity, which I can talk a little bit about later, underwater submersible UFOs. This area is south of the canyon where they were watching it. It's in the very south end of the canyon, behind this ridge. And they said it was coming up from behind this one particular ridge. I went up there, of course, and I've climbed around that area. I know this area very well. But they saw it from this one particular angle, facing east. They saw these things coming up from behind a ridge, very on the south end of Topanga. And what they saw was 10 or 20 groups of about 10 or 20 UFOs each, and these were oval-shaped objects with a weird symbol or something on the bottom that they saw one which hovered over them for just a second and scared the wits out of them. They said that this was not a fun experience. And they even called the police. They called all over the place. And the wife counted. She started counting them after the first group of 10 UFOs, then another group of 10 or 20. And then at the third group, she started counting them. She counted 200 objects. The husband said, no, I think it might be only 100. He says, I didn't count them. She counted them, so she would probably know better. But I think there was only 100 or 150, which really, you know, cracked me up. Because in my mind, 100, 150, 200, that's still an awful lot of UFOs, no matter how you look at it.
It is. And to go on for so long.
Right. So this is the night of June 14th, 1992. Years pass, and I catch another witness. He turns out I was on a radio show, and he was driving through Topanga Canyon on that night. He was the host, and he described his encounter to me, which happened on June 14th, 1992, like all these others.
When did you talk to him? Just recently?
No, this is not so recent. This part is not in the book, but I still have another one after this. But I just But this guy provides another piece of the puzzle, right? Because what that couple saw, who saw 200 UFOs, before they saw this giant bar of light in the sky. And she's like, look at that. What is that? And then it got dark, and they didn't see it anymore. But it was unusual enough to remark upon. And she also heard strange low buzzing noises at one point.
Wow.
So, strange, right? And so this guy's driving south through the canyon at around 9 o'clock at night. When he has two friends in the car with him. They're on the way back from a birthday party. When he notices that there's light coming down from the sky, and it's playing all over the ground, it's causing distinct shadows. It's very obvious, like a fireworks display or a movie set or something. And that's what he's thinking as he looks up and sees this giant cigar-shaped object, a giant glowing bar. And he said it was odd, so odd he immediately pulled over and got out of the car. He could not convince his friends to do so. They were kind of acting strangely and did not want to look. And so he gets out of the car, and he looks up at this thing for the next 20 minutes. And he says, it's this giant thing in the sky, a couple of thousand feet up there, and coming in and out of it are 20 or 30 smaller objects. And some dart away, some go back inside, most go out and dart away, which is basically what this other couple was describing. So he watches this for like 20 minutes until his friends start saying, come on in, we want to go. So he had to leave. It was still in the sky when he left, if you can imagine that.
Gosh, I mean, he thought it was something from the movie, so wow.
In the beginning he did. He realized, of course, it wasn't after looking at it. And he said, you know what was really strange is, he didn't get overly excited. It was only after it was over he was jumping up and down. But during the incident, he felt a strange calming influence.
Huh.
Which is something I hear it. I've heard it once. If I've heard it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
You know, it's some sort of I speculate that it's a ray, you know, a beam of energy that they put down, which kind of soothes the human brain.
Yeah.
Somehow.
So what other unusual stories have you received from people you've interviewed that is not normal or is not normally what you read in other books?
I'll get to that in just a second, but let me just finish this Topanga
story.
Because I got a new witness. I'm totally
okay.
Another one on that night. He didn't read the book. He came across my website.
And so
he knows nothing really about what's in the book, except, you know, what the excerpt is on the website. So he tells me that he was staying in the canyon all through the 90s and has had multiple sightings from this particular area where he was staying. which is high on one of the mountains there. And he said that he was out on the northwestern side of Moonfire Mountain. I don't know if you remember Louis Moonfires, but this is on the other side of this ridge, from where there's a couple who saw hundreds of UFOs coming up from behind this ridge that I described earlier.
And that's where he was living?
This guy was, well, not at this time. He was visiting there.
Oh.
On that night. He wasn't living there. This was, you know, a well-known Topanga spot.
And yes.
It's exactly on the other side of this ridge. So, well, this couple didn't see these UFOs coming up. You know, they couldn't see where the UFOs were exactly coming from. Well, this guy was there on that night, and he was looking at it from the other side. So, this is awesome, you know, when you think about it. So I've got someone telling me another point of view of exactly where these supposed UFOs were coming from. And what he said that he and several of his friends were outside when the canyon suddenly lit up, he describes, like daytime, for about 5 minutes. And I'm guessing he only saw part of the incident. He saw one of the releasings of these ships, right? Because what happened was this, for about 5 minutes, something hovered, he said, just over the mountainside, just over the opposite mountain.
Uh-huh.
So this is exactly what the couple couldn't see, was this giant object which appeared and started to apparently release UFOs. And he said it was totally silent, and I still have to do a complete interview with him. He's a little bit shy, as witnesses are. But he described what he saw as this very bright object, which stayed for at least 5 minutes and then disappeared.
So it lit up, and that's all he saw, was that it lit up and then there was an object. He didn't see where it came from?
No, it just suddenly appeared. He says he's lost contact with all the other people who were there. And his wife brought an article of mine, and he was shocked. And he says that he's had many sightings in the canyon, which I want to do a formal interview about. I haven't done it yet.
Uh-huh.
This is breaking news, so to speak. And he's also really interested in telling me about this basement in Venice, which he thinks is suspicious because it's got all this giant antennas and blacked-out SUVs. And I know that there's a lot of, you know where the old marine land was?
Yes.
There's a whole lot of unusual activity going on there as well.
That's fascinating. Sounds like road trip, you know?
I'm telling you.
Time to go out, do some field work.
He says no one's ever, they weren't able to go over to where this ridge was because it was a hike. But I know exactly where it is. It's through Santa Ynez Canyon. I know exactly the ridge that they're talking about.
Yeah.
And,
well, I just want to interrupt you for a second and let everybody who's listening that I am Christine Kisara Dennett. We're interviewing Preston Dennett, my brother-in-law, about some updated investigation work that he's been compiling for a new book. And you're listening to UFO and the Paranormal. And I'm hoping that somebody is listening and maybe they have some more stories to tell us. The number they can call is 888, area code, 228-4494. And please, anytime, dial the number, and we'd be happy to hear your story. So, Preston, you're going to put this in your book, like the new book that you're writing?
I'm going to have to write another book after that because that one's pretty much full up
of
amazing stories. And, some I will put in, some I won't. But I've got a lot of people who are telling these incredible stories, and I definitely think that they need to be told.
Right.
And, my next book upcoming, I just finished one on ghosts, actually, which I'm calling Ghosts of Greater Los Angeles. As you know, you illustrated it with amazing illustrations.
Yes.
So I'm excited
about
that.
Make it very dramatic. Which it is, actually.
Well, I was amazed. You made him so accurate, right? I mean, really. was amazing. But that'll be out in the spring. And I've got another book upcoming, which is out will be out next year, called UFOs Over New Mexico.
Ooh.
So I'm still busy, still writing the books.
Yes. Oh, wow.
So you wanted to know some of the unusual stories, huh?
Yes. I want to know some brand new lip-smacking stories that can keep me up all night, you know, those kind.
Well, I've got them. I've got, you know, it's amazing what's going on right now. And here's another story, which I interviewed a lady recently. The story actually, this occurred a while back in the 80s, I believe. So the story itself is not super recent. But it's one I haven't heard before, I'll tell you that much.
And uh-huh.
Really nice lady. She called me up, and she has been in California for many years, was hip on the music scene, and hung out with a lot of the leading musicians of the day, and was an actress, actually. So she was well-known in her day, well, not, you know, as an actress. I'm not super famous, but, you know, she was out there.
Uh-huh.
And she's an older lady right now, and she called me up because she says that she wants to make sure that her story gets told before, you know, she passes on. And I told her I would be more than happy to speak with her. And
wow.
She told me what are very much normal type of sightings. She's had some sightings in New York, which were some close-up sightings of metallic objects. New York, by the way, my book UFOs Over New York, that's a major hot spot there. It's in the top 10 of the United States. I believe it's like number 5 or number 7 of all the states as far as UFO
activity.
Pretty
incredible.
And she had a very close-up sighting and described it in detail, which, you know, is basically your metallic ship with lights on it, colored lights. And it really kind of scared her because she felt it was aware of her and was kind of looking at her.
Caller on line 2.
We have a caller on line 2.
Awesome. Caller, are you there?
Yes, hi. My name is Molly, and I'm listening to the show, and I heard you want to hear a UFO story, and I have one that happened about 10 years ago, and I don't tell too many people the story because they think I'm crazy.
Well, we would love and embrace your story. Please tell us everything, every little detail.
So I feel good to have the opportunity because I don't talk to many people, and I've been listening to stories of UFOs, and I've never found one like this. So that's why I'm like curious if maybe if you've heard anything like this. So let me start. The strange part is that it started with a dream. I was dreaming that I was in a ship and that I could see out the windows, and I'm flying over mountains, and then all of a sudden it's heading towards the mountain. I'm thinking we're going to crash, but actually the mountain opens up like prongs. Does that make any sense?
Like prongs?
Yeah, like the mountain top opens up like an orange that's cut. It just opens up.
Oh, wow.
Does that make sense?
Sure,
and
yeah.
We go in the mountain.
Wow.
And we go in the mountain. And then what happens, see, I'm thinking I'm dreaming this. And what happens, we land, I get down, and I remember going down some steps, and I greet people that I know. They're humans, and I'm hugging everybody saying, oh, you're here. What are you doing here? You know, it's like I knew who I was with. And then that part was gone, and when I woke up, I think I'm dreaming this, and when I woke up, I was paralyzed. I could not move. I couldn't even get my husband to wake up. And the only thing I could move was my eyes. And when I looked over to the left, there was a being standing next to me. And
right.
he had his hands over my stomach. He was doing something. And the being was not the usual gray. He was beige. Does that make sense? Have you heard of one that's beige in color?
I have, actually.
And that's why I think it's unusual, beige. He had, and this is kind of funny part, is because since I couldn't move my body, and I just looked over with my eyes, and my eyes connected with his eyes. It's like I looked right into his eyes, and I scared him. It's like he had the surprise, like his surprise look, and in my head, I went, oh, my God, I'm not supposed to wake up now. Like, he wasn't expecting me to wake up. I was supposed to still be out, I think. And I knew it. And it was like the being got nervous, and then all of a sudden he just kind of, like, disappeared. But he was beige, and what he reminded me of is like a beige Tin Man. Does that make any sense? You know, like Wizard of Oz, the Tin Man?
Oh, really?
Like, he didn't have a mouth. That's what he kind of reminded me. He was kind of, oh, God, square. Does that make sense? But he was beige.
And where are you located?
Now, I live in Peoria, Arizona.
Okay.
And I mean, I would have thought that I was dreaming the whole thing, except I did wake up and there was a being standing right over my bed with his hands right over my stomach. So that's why I don't
think. Did you have any medical conditions at the time?
Not really. Not that I'm, nothing serious. I've had a hysterectomy, but I don't think that had anything to do with it. That's not very, like, life-threatening. But I saw his whole face. I looked right at him. I even startled him when I woke up, and I knew I wasn't supposed to wake up when I did. And then it was just like he disappeared, but I saw him. He was right there. He was real. And that's when I knew that I don't think I was dreaming. I think this was real.
Oh, I'm so glad you called up. Thank you for sharing your story. That is so amazing.
Do you know the mountain or the area where you went to inside? Did you recognize the mountain?
I don't. That's the whole part thing. I remember seeing mountains, mountains, mountains. And I knew I was scared we were going to crash because we went straight down towards the mountain. And it opened up like tongues, like opening up.
I've heard of that.
Yes. Have you heard of that before?
Yes, I have. They have the technology to apparently enter into solid ground. Yeah.
No, because, see, I've been researching any stories of a mountain opening up and never heard of it. And that's why I thought it maybe was a dream. But you have heard that then.
Oh yeah. It's very rare, but it does happen.
You should read about Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta has an underground base.
I wasn't aware of that, so... I'm getting very nervous because then I don't think I was dreaming. I'm really nervous.
I wouldn't be too nervous. Have you had other experiences like that then?
When I was a child, I saw a UFO. I saw a UFO when I was, I would say, about 4 or 5, playing outside, and passed right over our neighborhood that it was so clear, and then we all ran into, like, to get our parents to show them this that was coming over the house, but nobody would come out, and I've had one since I was little, so.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and so I have a funny feeling that I don't know. I think I've had more that I'm really not aware of because I do have a daughter that's deadly scared. If she sees any kind of alien picture, anything, she freaks out totally.
Right.
He won't even look at a picture. So I'm like, oh, my God, don't tell me. There's more going on here than... So I've always wanted to get, like, regress maybe and find out if this was an actual event, you know.
Right.
Well, I have a feeling it is.
I could put you in... I mean, if you're really serious about that, which I would only recommend if you're really, really serious, I can put you in touch with people who do that. So
I've always been interested because it's kind of unusual, and it's all. This was like 10 years ago, but it never leaves my mind. So,
well, I highly suggest that if you have any interest in connecting and connecting with the UFO community and getting educated, mm-hmm. you can go through Preston, and he has a website.
Okay.
And I believe your website is PrestonDennett.com.
That's right.
And you can connect through him.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, well, I'm so glad you listened to my story. So now I feel I'm not crazy and that possible mountains that open up and beige beams. Because I've never heard of a beige-colored one. Never heard of that. They're all like gray or something, but this was a beige one.
Yeah, that's okay.
Well, I feel
much.
A little bit better. I had to kind of get it off my chest. So thanks for listening to me, you guys.
Oh, it's just absolutely wonderful that you called. We really appreciate it. And please connect with Preston, and he can give you so much information.
Oh, yes, I will. Okay, I'll check out his website. And I thank you so much for listening to me. I feel so much better.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You have a good night.
You too.
Bye. Wow, that just made my evening, having her tell us her story. That's just wonderful.
What a neat lady. She seems really nice.
Yeah, I hope she does follow up and, you know, connect with the community, because there's a lot of people that, there's a huge support system in the UFO community, and Preston, he's like one of the key figures in that community. So anybody who's listening to this station, you can connect with Preston. He has a website, PrestonDennett.com. And if you want, you can connect with me. I have an email. It's called Kesara Art, KESARAART, at gmail.com. So if any of you need to connect with the UFO community, either one of us can connect you and lead you towards some kind of a support group. We can interview you. We'd be happy to, talk to you about your experiences. I know they can be disoriented, but, you're not the only one. There's many, many, many people out there, and I'm sure Preston can tell you all about it.
Oh, yeah. Every time I speak, people come up to me to share encounters, and that's what was so neat about Molly, I think that was her name. Molly's mm-hmm. story was she was telling things that she hadn't heard before, which are verified to me that, she's obviously sincere, but when someone starts telling me details that are pretty rare, it's really exciting for me. Like one guy, I've interviewed him many times now, and I actually had him on the show. He was taken aboard this craft. And inside there were these 15-foot-tall praying mantis beings. And he says, I'm not exaggerating. He says he was able to estimate their height very well. He talked about how tall a backboard is on a basketball court and said that they were above that. So
wow. And I love her description of the ET, because that's what I do. I illustrate ETs. And I love the way she said it was a very square, and it was beige. And, later on, maybe when I talk to her, I could get a better description and even illustrate it for her.
I'm wondering if it was perhaps robotic, because there are people who report that as well.
Uh-huh.
But we'd have to get a better description. But very interesting story.
And very interesting.
Well, I have another unusual one for you. This lady, as I was telling you about, the actress, remember, who grew up in the music scene here in Southern California and had a close-up sighting
That's
of a metallic
right.
object in New York and did have a sighting with her son as well. Well, she had this one experience when she was a young lady. She's driving through the Southern California area. This was towards the sort of a Palmdale area, that direction north of Los Angeles. And she sees on the side of the road this figure. This is during the day. This is like early afternoon, or actually it was before noon. It was late morning. And she sees this short little man. And as soon as she sees him, well, she recognizes him for what he appears to be, which is, get this, a leprechaun. He has got the little shoes pointed. He has got a buckle that's shiny and metal. He's got green tight pants. He's got the whole, a vest, a hat. And he is not normal looking by any means. He's not a human being. She's insisting on this. And
yes.
And it was hard for her to say exactly why. But she had the impulse. He flags her down. And she, out of her mind, she doesn't know why she does it, she pulls over. Normally she does not pull over for strange leprechauns. not that this has ever happened before. But you see what I'm saying.
Yes.
So she opens the door, and he hops in and closes the door and motions her to go. And they're silent. They're not talking for a little while there, and then he starts making just small talk. You know, how's the weather? You know, how are you feeling? Light traffic, you know, things like this. And he directs her to pull off on this side road, which, and she's obedient as can be, doesn't know why she's obeying this leprechaun, doesn't think, it's kind of got a weird calm about her, which she doesn't quite understand why she's not freaking out. But this is something, again, I run across, you know, and these are one of these rare details which I think UFO investigators can use to help verify the veracity of a story. She described this detail. She says, I was strangely calm. I'm like, yep, heard that before. And she's going on, she says, the eyes of this thing. And she went on about that for a little while. And that's the dead giveaway. That's what gave it away to me, what we were dealing with here.
Because so you think she saw a screen? Like a cloaking, you know, how they change their image?
Yeah, my guess is this alien, and I'm going to call it that, because that's what I think it is, either imposed this on her mind. I don't think so. My guess is that he actually wore this leprechaun costume and somehow changed his appearance to why he does this, I don't know, but it's what UFO investigators call a screen memory. And there are a lot of mysteries unsolved about it. We don't know, again, if it's imposed by our own mind, even. I doubt that.
Well, maybe the little laddie would offer some gold, and then she could take him anywhere.
Well, certainly makes you start wondering about all the myths of all the different types of creatures, right? From leprechauns and fairies. I mean, here we have an actual mythical leprechaun.
Did this happen recently?
No, this was in the 80s.
Okay.
So they drive off on a road which turns out to be really isolated. This is not a surprise to me, but you know what I mean? This is something I would have expected because I've heard this before as well. People have an impulse to drive off to some isolated road in the wilderness. And she's finding herself driving off into the wilderness with this leprechaun. And she does.
That's hilarious.
And this is what happens next. They don't do a lot of talking, and she says the road starts to get really narrow. It's dirt road and starts to get full of ruts and starts to have a cliff on it and starts to kind of stop being a road anymore. And she became overly terrified. She became terrified that she was going to have a car accident. And gosh, if I either the car became stuck or she said, that's it, I'm not going anymore, I forget. And they stopped and sat there. And this leprechaun's not saying anything. It's just sitting there with her. And she says, she looks down, you can see this valley. They're looking down over a valley. And you can see houses down there. And she's kind of wishing she was down there, right? And because she's up here alone with this strange creature. And she's like, you know, and it starts to get dark. You know, it starts starting to get late at some point. And she's like, I'm not going to stay up here all night. You know, I'm not going to be here when it gets dark, I mean, is what she's saying, because it's going to get dark. And the guy doesn't say anything, so she just gets out and leaves him there. And she walks
down. In the car?
Uh-huh. She leaves the car and goes down and hikes down into the valley and goes into a house. And some weird stuff happens there, too. Something weird happened, which she...
When she goes in the house?
Uh-huh. She loses her memory. And, I forget what happened next. I still have to do another interview with her because she jumped around a little bit.
But, it sounds a little confusing.
She doesn't quite remember how the story ends. But, as I recall. But
well, we're getting near the end of our hour, and I just want to remind everybody that this is UFOs and the Paranormal, and we're talking with Preston Dennett, and my name is Christy. And so that was the end of the story, huh, is that she ended up in a house, and she kind of loses her memory, and then what happens after that?
She doesn't really remember. This was a while back. I believe she had to go get the car. So that's what basically happened.
Where did this happen?
This was around this area in Southern California. I have the exact... She told me. But I believe it was Palmdale, that area.
Okay,
out in the desert.
In the desert.
The desert area.
That's fascinating. Well, we actually got a caller, and I really appreciate her calling and sharing her story. That makes the show really exciting. And if you want to get a hold of Preston, you can go through his website to get a hold of him, Preston Dennett. And it's, can you spell it for us, Preston?
Sure. It's P-R-E-S-T-O-N, D as in David, E-N-N-E-T-T, Preston Dennett, all one word. Yep.
Yeah, .com. And you can get a hold of me, kisaraart@gmail.com. And Kisara is spelled K-E-S-A-R-A, and then A-R-T, art@gmail.com. And if you have any questions or you want to connect with people, we can connect you. We do interviews. I am an illustrator. I can illustrate your ETs. And we're very supportive of anybody who's really curious and has no idea. They think they're the only ones in the whole entire world that are having these experiences, and they're very wrong. There's a lot of people out there having these experiences. How many people do you think on average, Preston?
It's a great question because I did a survey. I've heard that J. Allen Hynek, the father of modern ufology, said that 1 in 40 people have been abducted, but that's way too high. 1 in 40 people have had an onboard experience? No way. I know that many people, so I surveyed everyone I knew. I found 5 people within my family circle, a circle of friends, family, and coworkers, who had had an onboard experience. I surveyed all the researchers and wrote an article, which I called 1 in 40, and a lot of most of the researchers agree that it's very common and millions of people are having it, 1 in 40, 1 in 50. And I published the article, and 1 year later, the Roper poll came out, which surveyed thousands of people to find out how common abductions are, and they came up with the number 1 in 50. So the editor of the MUFON Journal wrote me back. He says, well, you predicted that. I'm like, wow, cool. So, yeah, it's a lot of people.
Well, the next radio show that we have together, We're going to have a radio show about Preston's predictions. Okay?
My predictions?
So get ready.
Okay.
I'm going to host that radio show, and I'm going to hear about your predictions, and everybody get their pens out and their calendar, and we're going to write it down and see which ones come true. So that's a great way to end this show. Thank you for listening. I'm Christine Kisara-Dennett. We just talked to Preston Dennett, and thank you for listening to UFO and the Paranormal. And have a wonderful evening, because it's a full moon and Venus is out there and it's beautiful. Go out there, take a walk, and look for UFOs.